So 50 years ago, I was a 14-year-old student in Arizona. We were studying poetry. Our anthology of American literature included two poems by a Chicago poet. One was called Fog. Now, this was in Arizona where I lived. I had never seen fog. I could only imagine what fog might look like, coming in on little cat feet, sitting looking over the harbor and city on silent haunches, then moving on. Just try to imagine that that's fog, if you've never seen fog. Well, we didn't read the second poem in the anthology by this poet. My teacher said something about it being too political. She moved on to Sarah Teasdale. My interest was stimulated. So I ignored Teasdale and I read the political poem. Pile the bodies high at Austerlitz and Waterloo. Shovel them under and let me work. I am the grass. I cover all. And pile them high at Gettysburg. And pile them high at Ypres and Verdun. Shovel them under and let me work. 2 years, 10 years. And passengers ask the conductor, what place is this? Where are we now? I am the grass. Let me work. Indeed, it was political. And I owe a debt to my teacher, who, by avoiding the poem, focused my attention on it. Impressed by the simple power of grass, I began to study the life of its author. Carl Sandburg was born on a corn husk mattress a little after midnight on January 6, 1878. The birth occurred in a three-room house on 3rd Street. The second house east of the Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy railroad tracks in Galesburg, Illinois. His mother made his diapers from Pillsbury Best flour sacks. His father was a blacksmith at the CB&Q railroad shop. Father worked at his trade 11 hours a day, 6 days a week. Mother raised 7 children. Sandberg's parents were immigrants from Sweden with no formal education. They know little of the complex culture in the big cities of America. Their life involved simple tasks of working, caring for home and family, and attending church. Not being authorities on literature, they could not have imagined that one of their 7 children would grow up to become a famous poet. The Sandberg family attended the Swedish Lutheran Church. In a chapter called Judgment Day, in his autobiography, Carl Sandburg described a memory that illustrates the predestination theology preached in the Swedish Lutheran Church and the impact it had on his family. He wrote, after dinner, the talk slowly shifted to the sermon of the day. Slowly, the talk got around to where the preacher had so solemnly told us, nobody knows for sure who will be among the saved on the last day. It might be you, it might be him, it might be me. There would be loved ones separated, some going to the blessed happiness of heaven, others to everlasting fire. And then, not slowly, but suddenly, everyone at the table was in tears. Down our cheeks, tears ran, and we looked at each other. It had never happened before in our house. We had seen the mother cry once or twice, and us children blubbering plenty of times, but never the father. This was the first time we had seen tears in his eyes and running down his face. We children looked out of the corners of our eyes. No one was either ashamed or proud. Had we not heard that loved ones would be torn apart on that last day? My feeling one moment was that my mother looked at my father and believed there was no certainty that he and she would not be separated on that last day. No one could tell. The matter of the faithful and the faithless would not be clear up till the last day. So we wept. In unison, we wept. Slowly we gulped and choked down the sorrow that had come suddenly, the sorrow that arose out of that mystery of what the judgment will be on us in the last day. Now, there was one religious group in Galesburg, Illinois, that differed from the traditional theology of the Lutherans, the Baptists, and the Methodists. In 1851, this religious group established a school they called the Illinois Liberal Institute. They later changed the name to Lombard College in honor of Benjamin Lombard, an Illinois farmer who gave the school a great deal of money. Within the school was a seminary to train Universalist ministers. Sandburg wrote about this strange religious group. Mama spoke in hushed tones about the Universalists. I was 8 or 9 years old when I asked her about them. She shook her head with a grave face. She gave her ideas about the Universalists in 2 short sentences. They say there is no hell, and they believe in dancing in the church. On the first point, I found out that she was correct, and that Universalists were saying there is no hell. On the second point, I learned that she had been listening to Gabmouse. I came to see later that most of the preachers in town spoke from their pulpits against dancing, either square or round, while the Universalists said little or nothing about dancing, either in the church or out, claiming only that since there is no hell, you couldn't dance your way to hell. I didn't know what to make of it. My mother had a large and loving heart and a wide compassion. And her 2 brief and absolute points about the Universalists had me looking at the Universalists with suspicion. I had a vague notion that maybe there ought to be a hell, and there might be something wrong about people who said positively, there is no hell. When he was 13 years old, Sandburg graduated from grammar school and immediately went to work to support the family. He worked as a newspaper boy, a milkman, a firefighter, a porter, a bottle washer, a water boy, an ice cutter, and for 4 months he was a hobo, traveling around the country, riding freight trains. He was 18. One of his hobo stories tells about his youthful understanding of religion. A hobo knocked at the back door and asked a woman for something to eat. The hobo explained that he had not had a bite to eat for 3 days. The woman said she would get him something. The hobo waited. Finally, the door opened, and the woman's skinny hand went towards him with a thin, dry crust of bread. She said, "I give you this, not for your sake, not for my sake, but for Christ's sake. As he took the crust of bread, he looked at it, and then he turned his face towards the woman and said, "Lady, listen to me. I beg of you, not for my sake, not for your sake, but for Christ's sake, put some butter on it." In 1899, Sandburg entered Lombard College. The Universalists had founded the school because they valued education. However, other schools that the Universalists had sent their children to, had tried to turn the children against the beliefs of their parents. Many a Universalist family found that children returning home during school vacations would denounce their parents for their belief in universal salvation and announce to their parents that they were going to go to hell because they were Universalists. Now, under these circumstances, it was inevitable that 19th century Universalists would establish their own schools. Besides Lombard College, they founded Tufts University, St. Lawrence University, the University of Akron, California Institute of Technology, and Goddard College. The faculty did not require students attending Lombard College to study the Universalist religion. However, the president of the school and many teachers had trained to be Universalist ministers, and this ensured that students like Carl Sandburg would receive a good dose of liberal religion in the classroom. In addition to earning part of his tuition, working in various jobs, Sandburg got a job at the school ringing the bell that summoned and dismissed the classes on the hour. So he sat in the bell tower with a watch, and every hour he would pull the rope. Sitting in the tower hour after hour, Sandburg found his eyes wandering to the walls of the small room, and it happened that the school used the bell tower as storage space to hold the overflow from the college library. The extra books stored in the room consisted primarily of books about Universalism. So often, when Sandburg was waiting during the hour between classes to ring the bell, he would sit on the floor of the room and read Universalist theology. The Universalists of the 19th century were the sons and daughters of farmers and laborers. As the son of a railroad blacksmith from Galesburg, Illinois, Sandburg found it easy to identify with their origin and their dream. He had been born in a climate where religion focused on predestination, on a fear of hell, on a vindictive God. He found it refreshing to discover a religion that believed in the notion of free will, and the idea that all people would go to heaven, and in the vision of a God who was loving and kind. Although he did not join the Universalist Church, its theology became his theology. He developed a Universalist belief in the goodness and dignity of every human being. About religion, he wrote, "I am a Christian, a Quaker, a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Confucius, and maybe even a Catholic pantheist or a Joan of Arc who hears voices. I am all of these and more." In the fall of 1913, a Chicago magazine called Poetry agreed to publish his Chicago poems. Sandburg received words of praise from many writers. Rosiah Pound wrote from Italy. William Butler Yeats sent his compliments. Edgar Lee Masters praised Sandburg. But not everyone liked the style of the new poet. Edmund Wilson wrote, "Carl Sandburg wouldn't know an abstraction if he met one on the street." Sandburg replied, "According to Edmund Wilson, my trouble is that when I write about smoke and steel, I write about smoke and steel and not something else. Well, like Sandburg, I am a meat and potatoes preacher, not good with metaphor. Living near Chicago for 8 years, I grew to love his poetry. In his words, I hear the clang of Chicago's elevated trains, the noise of the factory gate at quitting time, and the language and the pain of the workers. He wrote, I ask professors who teach the meaning of life to tell me, what is happiness? And I went to famous executives who bossed the work of thousands of men. They all shook their heads and gave me a smile, as though I was trying to fool with them. And then one Sunday afternoon, I wandered out along the Desplaines River, and I saw a crowd of Hungarians under the trees with their women and children and a keg of beer and an accordion. In another poem, he points to the weakness of a radical socialist friend. So you want to divide up all the money there is and give every man his share. That's it. Put it all in one big pile and split it even for everybody. And the land, the gold, silver, oil, copper, you want to divide that up? Sure. And even whack for all of us. Do you mean that to go for horses and cows? Sure. Why not? And how about pigs? Oh, the hell with you. You know I have two pigs. As he describes his daughter at the age of 17 months, I remember my own children's efforts at learning to talk. This girl child speaks five words. No for no, and no for yes. No for either yes or no. Kiwi for wheat, or oats, or corn, or barley, or any food taken with a spoon. Go away. As an edict to keep your distance and let her determinations operate. Spoon, or spoon, or cup, or anything to be handled, all instruments, tools, paraphernalia of utility and convenience are spoons. Mama is her only epithet and synonym for God and the government and the one force of majesty and intelligence obeying the call of pity, hunger, pain, cold, dark. Mama, mama, mama. Now, the sides of our worship space remind me of another Sandburg poem. I was foolish about windows. The house was an old one, and the windows were small. I asked a carpenter to come and open the walls and put in bigger windows. The bigger the windows, the more it costs, he said. The bigger, the cheaper, I said. So he tore off the siding and plaster and put in big windows and bigger windows. I was hungry for windows. One neighbor said, "If you keep on, you'll be able to see everything there is." I answered, "That'll be all right. That'll be classy enough for me." Another neighbor said, "Pretty soon, your house will be all windows." And I said, "Who would the joke be on then?" And still another said, "Those who live in glass houses gather no moss." And I said, "Birds of a feather should not throw stones." And a soft answer turneth away rats. In 1967, at the age of 89, Sandberg died. Although he was not a member of any church, the minister selected by his wife and daughter to lead the memorial service was a Unitarian Universalist. Today, his last home is a National Historic Site located near Hendersonville in the village of Flat Rock, North Carolina. And if you're ever nearby, I encourage you to visit. A beautiful home and a beautiful setting filled with windows. Simple people, the sons of farmers and laborers, lacking the grace and sophistication of the upper classes, the Universalists wanted only to establish a more loving religion, a more inclusive religion, a more humane religion for all of us. In the writings of Carl Sandburg, the Universalist faith lives on. In one of his last poems, he wrote, "The best preacher is the heart. The best teacher is time. The best book is the world." Amen.